The perils of looking for lessons from history in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan will be the Vietnam for them. I want to tell you clearly, we will win and they will die.
A Taliban spokesman speaking to CNN first evokes Vietnam in referring to NATO forces in Afghanistan, and then moments later goes back 10 centuries in time to evoke the Crusades.
Our jihad is against the Crusader. We do not want to kill civilians. We ask of the civilians, don't be close to the troops, be away from them, not to be targeted.
History may be no decoder ring for the events unfolding in Afghanistan, where navigating uncharted waters requires fluency in languages other than English. Decoding Afghanistan? Hey Toto, we're not in Vietnam anymore on The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning, everyone. Thursday, November 5th. I'm John Hockenberry here with Celeste Headlee. Good morning, Celeste.
Good morning. Also coming up on the program, Yankees fans can celebrate today. Big win in the Bronx last night. Native American leaders are going to meet with President Obama. Is it a photo op or is it a significant sign of things to come? And how video games can help your brain.
But first, Christine Fair, professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. Christine, thanks for being with us. And the question for you, bluntly, how perilous is history, like, say, Vietnam, as any guide to the events unfolding now in Afghanistan, do you think?
Absolutely perilous. It's not remotely clear that in terms of the military operations that Vietnam in any way, shape, or form resembles what's going on in Afghanistan. I would argue there is another parallel that's going around, and that is the parallel to what happened in Iraq and the so-called Sunni uprising to justify the raising of militias. It's not remotely clear that the surge had anything to do with the Iraqis rising up and tossing out a largely foreign al-Qaeda presence from their country.
All right, well, historical parallels and the perils of following them too closely. In just a moment, Christine Fair will stay with us, but first, everything else you need to know this morning.
In the headlines, as we've been discussing, the UN says it's temporarily moving 600 of its staff out of Afghanistan because of concerns for their safety. Five UN workers were killed in an attack in Kabul last week. Here in New York, as we said, the World Series is done. The Yankees defeated the Phillies 7-3 last night to win in six games. That's their 27th win of the championship title. And in Washington, the Senate has voted 98-0 to extend unemployment benefits for at least 14 weeks. The body also voted to expand a tax credit for home buyers, and that's now going to go to the House, where it's expected to pass easily.
The automaker GM is confirming that it will cut 10,000 jobs at its European subsidiary Opel. Trade unions in Germany have called strikes at Opel factories there today in protest. Meanwhile, Toyota, the world's largest automaker, announced today that it earned a profit of $242 million last quarter after three straight quarterly losses. The markets today mostly flat yesterday, so the Dow opens at 9802. The S&P starts trading at 1047. And the Nasdaq is going to kick off at 2056. Well, the Republicans have finally come up with an alternative to the Democratic health care reform package that's moving through the Congress. They're going to be releasing it this week. Tell us the top three items you want to see in a final bill. Be a member of the loyal opposition and call 877-8-MY-TAKE with your suggestions for the Republican alternative to Democratic health care reform. Or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, everyone. It's fair to say we encounter this frustration probably every morning we lead with the stories out of Afghanistan. That, you know, to understand where events in Afghanistan are leading, you've got some extreme positions to reconcile, usually.
To put it lightly.
I mean, just take politics, okay? Here's a rosy view of Afghan politics from newly named President Hamid Karzai.
My government will be for all Afghans, and all those who want to work with me are most welcome, regardless of whether they opposed me in the election or whether they supported me in the election.
Open arms from Hamid Karzai, right, the president, for cooperation and a rosy political future. But now you've got a less rosy, some might say diametrically opposed view of the political prospects in Afghanistan from its chief opposition leader, Abdullah Abdullah.
To hope that the same government will deliver in dealing with corruption, issues of governance, bringing security in this country, it sounds like an exaggeration.
He's not optimistic. And finally, optimism is not a part of this dark suggestion from a Taliban spokesman speaking to CNN.
This is the war of martyrdom. Don't worry about this. We want to fight. We want to fight for martyrdom.
So reconciling the sharply divergent pictures of how to proceed in Afghanistan is also complicated by ethnic and tribal tensions, far more complex even than the Sunni-Shiite conflicts that created bloody chaos in Iraq. And all of this bleakness that I bring up here at the top of the program, Celeste, is motivated by that discussion we had earlier this week.
Right.
Comparing Vietnam and looking at American decision-making in Vietnam as compared to what the decision-making is like in Afghanistan.
The decision to escalate or not.
Well, a lot of people responded to that. I mean, and so it motivated us to ask this morning, is history a bubble that distorts rather than informs? And we've got some pretty interesting reactions to our Vietnam conversation and want to peer in the other direction entirely this morning. And joining us now is Lise Doucette, BBC correspondent in Kabul. Lise, good morning.
Good morning.
And Janaya Chir-
you're not going to ask me to reconcile all those different views.
Well, we're going to try, and we've got a few minutes to do it. Also, Janaya Sharif is a professor at Payne College in Augusta, Georgia, where he teaches Pashto language. He is himself African-American. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
And I want to thank you for helping to motivate this conversation, because it was you who wrote in and said about our conversation regarding the Vietnam lessons for decision makers in Afghanistan. You are comparing the Taliban, vicious and medieval, to the Viet Cong, you wrote to us in an email, who were fighting for progress and national liberation. The Viet Cong were supported by half of the world, you said. I have yet to come across anyone who openly endorses the Taliban. You going to help us out this morning, Janayed?
I'm going to try.
All right. And also with us, of course, Christine Fair, professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University, a friend of The Takeaway, who spoke there at the top saying Vietnam is a perilous parallel thinking about Afghanistan. Christine, as always, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Lise Doucette, let's get an update. First of all, the violence recently in Afghanistan has caused the United Nations to make a decision. They're moving away from vulnerable areas. First of all, what do you make of the UN's decision this morning?
Came back from the United Nations compound, and they're very much taking pains to say this is a temporary move. They're going to take out half of their staff, some 600 people, the unessential staff, they say, and I think but whether or not any of them are not essential is a moot point. But they have to make some changes to their security environment here. They have some 93 guest houses scattered across the city, and coming after that very brutal attack by the Taliban, which killed several UN workers, they now believe they've got to have a better security operation here if they're going to protect their staff, because the staff here were also feeling very vulnerable. A number of them said they wanted to leave. They didn't feel safe here. But of course, for Afghans, this sends a very negative signal. They're saying if the UN is leaving, what about us? Is security really that bad? The UN says they're coming back, and everyone here hopes they do, because that will send a signal that it is still safe for Afghans to be here and for the international community.
Well, before you joined us, Lise, we quoted a Taliban spokesman who spoke with CNN last summer and mentioned that Afghanistan will be NATO's Vietnam, making explicitly the comparison of Vietnam. I'm wondering, if, as you look at the situation on the ground in Afghanistan with your long history in South Asia, if Vietnam is any kind of a lesson as you look at the different tensions and rivalries that exist in Afghanistan right now?
You know, I'm not the best person to ask about this, because everyone is invoking history. What do you call Afghanistan? Afghanistan, graveyard of empires. Afghanistan, the place where, you know, Hindu Kush, this formidable landscape, formidable people, as if somehow mountains and men are destiny. I think it stops us from looking at Afghanistan on its own terms. Mm-hmm. Afghanistan has its own particular history. Afghanistan has its own people. Afghanistan has its own complexity. Why are you adding the complexity of Southeast Asia? And besides, we already know what happened in Vietnam. We don't know what is going to happen here.
Very good point. Janayed Sharif, professor at Payne College in Augusta, Georgia. What is it that we need to know about the rivalries that exist on the ground, do you think, to make intelligent decisions about policy in Afghanistan?
Okay, before I get to the rivalries, can I just respond to the Vietnam thing? Or
sure, go right ahead.
Well, you summarized my position pretty good, but, you know, I am a student. I'm basically a literary critic, and I also teach English, not just Pashto. But to me, I'm a student of history also, and to me it seems very unfair to bring up something like Vietnam into the decision making. Now, it's okay to put it in a history book or in a lecture, but I'm basically saying that the Viet Cong and Hanoi, for that matter, were standing for change. They were historically on the side of progress. on the side of creating a nation. But here you have the Taliban who have no social, no political agenda, no economic agenda, absolutely. The only agenda they have is socio-cultural. And they want to just burn schools and destroy education. So I just think that it is unfair to make that comparison.
All right, let's get a comment from Christine Fair. Is Junaid Sharif making a fair characterization of the Taliban as a reactionary throwback with no political agenda in Afghanistan, Christine Fair?
I mean, largely I agree with everything that your other guests have said and really don't have anything to add. The only parallel that perhaps has any relevance is the fact that every war we've had, certainly since I've been an adult, has been paralleled to Vietnam. And I think the issue that we're really getting at when we talk about Vietnam is not the particularities of the conflict per se, but rather a trend of increasing public opposition to the war and putting pressure upon policymakers sitting in Congress and also in the White House to make different decisions. I mean, that's the only parallel that has any relevance. There's nothing to do with Vietnam in terms of the social, cultural, and political context of the conflict.
But, you know, Christine, is there a danger here for many of our military decision makers who, if they didn't actively participate in the Vietnam War, have a very strong memory of it, is there a danger that they're going to make comparisons that will lead to mistaken choices in the strategy in Afghanistan?
Well, the odd thing is I've never met a military officer or enlisted person that served in Afghanistan make that parallel. This is a parallel that commentators and some politicians are making. I've never heard this parallel come from the military.
That's interesting. Junaid Sharif, do you think there's something narcissistic about the constant evocations of Vietnam? And if you would, let's talk about the rivalries. Let's talk about how this needs to be assessed from the ground in Afghanistan.
Well, about the rivalries, I heard Abdullah talk to his followers last night on Afghan media, and his tone was very conciliatory. And he's, you know, he represents a coalition, but as a person, he himself, I have to give him the credit. He is a seasoned politician, and he has the wisdom to control the excesses of whatever frustrations there might be. There is, of course, Afghanistan is regionally oriented. There are tendencies, tensions. They have been there. But there is a myth among the journalists and pundits that Afghanistan has never had a central government. That is simply not true.
Yeah, interesting point.
And so if we have had a central government since at least the beginning of the 1900s...
Right, and it included a monarchy and the central government that was in place before the Soviet invasion. We're running out of time here, Junaid. Thanks so much. Let me just end with Lise Doucette, who's in Kabul. Do you think Abdullah, taking Junaid's point there, has a chance to be a political leader, even though he's out of the government at this point?
Well, there is no opposition structure in Afghanistan. Hamid Karzai is against the development of formal political parties. There are no opposition benches here, no sense of a loyal opposition. I think the personal relationship between him and Hamid Karzai is quite difficult now. Possibly some of his allies will make it into the government. He'll always be around. He always keeps a foot in all camps. But right now, he's not looking for a role in government.
And the question is really, what are the choices for the Obama administration as it prepares to announce its strategy, possibly within the next couple of weeks? Lise Doucette, BBC correspondent in Kabul, Afghanistan. Junaid Sharif, professor at Payne College, where he teaches Pashto and English, and Christine Fair, professor of the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown. Thanks so much for a great discussion, guys.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
You know, you can catch the show live Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening. If you have any feedback or think there's any stories we should be covering on The Takeaway, contact us at 1-877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. See ya.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.